As Drew indicated to you, our sessions today are on winter waiting. And you've gone through, I think, the previous three sessions. And now we're at winter. I'm going to read to you what I was sent, so you'll have a little bit of a roadmap mentally, at least of what I am to cover. We won't get it all. We'll get what we can with the time remaining. It says, your topic is the importance of rest in the Christian life. Rest, finding pauses in our work to recover, refresh, and renew. It's a theme found throughout the Bible, and then they gave me several passages. Beyond physical rest, we understand true rest can only be found through drawing near to, learning from, and obeying Christ. Explore the topic of rest, considering these topics. Growing in patience as we wait for the Lord's answer and guidance. What is the role of prayer in renewing ourselves spiritually? Look at the temptations of being overextended, over-involved in activities of the world, overworked, and otherwise exhausting ourselves, neglecting spiritual and or physical renewal. Consider the temptation of being underworked, taking retirement into our spiritual lives. What does me time look like for a Christian? How do we help bear others' burdens when it's apparent they need rest? The importance of humbling ourselves to share when we need to help and rest ourselves. Was it good for Hezekiah to get his additional years? We won't be able to cover all of those, or I may touch on them, but we certainly won't exhaust them. That could be a week study in the assignment I have, and probably the other teachers would say the same thing about their assignments. But the congregation of Prince Road has always given us fair amount of latitude and flexibility to take it in directions that we think would be edifying or most interesting to us. There's a French proverb that says, 40 is the old age of youth, and 50 is the youth of old age. And I think there is some wisdom to that. During my time with you this morning, I'll be sometimes talking about senior citizen activities or needs, but probably at least half or more than half of the time, I'll be talking about simply things for us as adults. And hopefully everybody in this class can claim to be an adult. Are you an old person yet? Well, if you are, you may not realize it. I think Oliver Wendell Holmes was correct when he said, and I quote, a person is always startled when he hears himself seriously called an old man for the first time. It takes most of us about 10 years to get used to being the age we are, and by that time, of course, we're no longer that age, and we've moved on. But as we age, become adults, we're no longer going down the hill for the high school and college age class. Are we appreciative of that? Are we enthusiastic about that? Or are we a bit resentful about that? To be sure, there is no inherent value in age. When Katharine Hepburn was asked about this, she said, and I quote, I have no romantic feelings about age. You're either interesting at any age or you're not. There's nothing particularly interesting about being old or being young, for that matter. Neither youth nor age is anything we can take credit for. And that would fall under the category, as I spoke last night, of changes that are inevitable. Tom Wilson said, wisdom doesn't necessarily come with age. Oh, I wish it did, but he's right. Sometimes age just shows up on its own. And many of us can relate to that. However, we do hope and we do pray that we get wiser with age. Unfortunately, that doesn't always happen, but I like to think in general, it happens at least to a little bit. And when it does, it's something to be grateful for. And if you're not at that age yet, you've got something to look forward to. If you are of that age now, you've got something that I think God expects you to use with great discretion and discernment. Maybe we sometimes miss having some of the physical vitality of our young days. But it's worth remembering, as Richard Needham did, it's easier to have the vigor of youth when you're old than it is to have the wisdom of age when you're young. It's easier to be vigorous when you're old than it is to be wise when you are young. What that means is that if you are older, you define that, you have a great benefit over those that are young. Because you've been both young and old. All they've ever been is young. Someday they may be older, but you've got two resources. But there's one thing for sure, age has its certain definiteness that youth doesn't have. When we're young, our lives are filled with all kinds of possibilities. When we're young, we have dreams. We have aspirations. And as we age, we have memories and thoughts. As has been said, a young person is a theory, an old person is a fact. Victor Hugo once wrote, "When grace is joined with wrinkles, it's adorable. There is an unspeakable dawn in happy old age." And I agree with that. And I would add that age is best seen as a goal. The years of our youth are not meant to be hoarded, they're meant to be spent. That's what Moses meant when in Psalms 90, the psalm that he wrote, in verse 12, he said, "Teach us to number or account for our days, that we may gain the heart of wisdom." The only thing you and I can exchange a day for and not get cheated is to be a little wiser at the end of the day. That doesn't always happen. We waste a lot of our days, but I think Moses was right in his articulation of that. It's been said that America is the oldest society in the history of the world. I don't know that I believe that because I don't know how to prove that. Back in the patriarchal dispensation, people lived to be old. But there may have been a lot of people that didn't live very long. So I don't know what the average lifespan was. I can read the book of Genesis and see the 700, 800, 900 years people lived, but how many children died in birth? But be that as it may, America is graying. We tend to live longer on average. For the first time in our nation's history, senior citizens outnumber teenagers. As best they can estimate, and I can find, there are approximately 42 million teenagers in America today. I know that on some occasions it seems like there are several trillion, but it's only 42 billion. Those of us over 65 are probably around 55 million. And that's a change. It's a change due somewhat to life expectancy in industrial nations, where the old age population has increased because of improved medication, maybe, improved ways of extending life, sometimes extending it longer than it ought to be extended or we even want it to be extended. In the 1900s, only about 3 million of the nation's citizens were over 65 out of a total of 75 million people. In the year 2000, our senior citizens had increased to about 35 million of 280 million. It's estimated that in 1920, 17% of our population will be senior citizens. By 2050, There will be 400,000 Americans over the age of 100. We are growing older as a nation. Medical scientists tell us that we peak at about the age of 23. So if you're older than 23, you're on a downward slope. Now that's an average, but our ability to learn and assimilate things begins to diminish after our early 20s. Now I did not say we get that are the people that are below 23 are smarter than people above. They just are able to learn quicker. That's why language is so much easier for children to learn than it is for us as adults. Yet our spirituality should be at its peak when we have matured. And dare I say, maybe we're senior citizens. But having said that, many times when we reach that age, we become susceptible to shirking work and extolling rest. When I got this topic, I think the very first thing that popped into my mind, and rest is a good topic, and I'm gonna go with it. But what popped into my mind is, of the people I'm going to be looking at when I'm at Eminence, how many of them are overworked versus overrested? Well, I don't know the answer to my own question, but I suspect that there is more overrested people in the audience today and maybe standing before you than overworked. When we have the most discretionary time available, we are often inclined to do the least in terms of productive activity. Don't talk to me about how busy you are now that you've retired. You may be, but if you are, it's probably a choice you have made, not a necessity that your life requires. We make a tremendous mistake, I believe, as a culture, and the church reflects the culture. We make a tremendous mistake when we believe that busyness is a virtue. Busyness is not a virtue. If there is virtue in your busyness, it comes not from the fact that you are busy. It comes from the object that you have chosen to be busy in. Yet we get older and we say, I'm just busier than I've ever been before. Well, God bless you. That doesn't tell me much about the value of my and your lives. Tell me what you're busy about. Tell myself what I'm busy about. But godly things go beyond Bible study and verbal teaching. They also include such things as caring for our families, caring for one another, serving one another. And there are some tremendous examples of that in our audience today. I'm not going to call out any names, even though it would be in a complimentary fashion, because some people embarrass easy. But some of you have served very, very well. I read a quote, an excerpt from Irma Bomback last night. Some of you are caring for your parents. At the same time, you're having to care for your children. God bless you in those efforts. But that's not always the way all of us approach it. Spiritual rest, which is really the most important of the rests that we'll talk about today, is a profound concept in Christian theology. Hebrews chapter 4 is the first 10 or 11 verses is an exhortation on spiritual rest as it relates to eschatology, or the life as we move from this earth. But rest is not simply a physical issue, that it also encompasses the soul's tranquility. So I'd like to now spend a little bit of time on the theology of rest and work, because I don't know how to address rest without addressing work. Rest without work is laziness. Period. Rest because of work is a God-intended pattern for us as His children to engage ourselves in. Whether paid or unpaid, work is how most of us spend most of our waking hours pre-retirement. In those hours, we produce goods, we provide services, we make meals, we shepherd people, we shepherd dreams, we rear children, we organize chaos, we plan for the future, and then you know what? We wake up the very next day and do the same thing over again. For some, work is seen as drudgery, a necessary evil, the antithesis of rest. For others, work is a joy of their life. But for the Christian, I believe work is part of God's given mandate and blessing to cultivate and create. David, writing in Psalms 40 and 5, says, O Lord, my God, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done. God works. Now, I know in Genesis chapter 2, it says God rested. We'll talk a little bit about that. He rested from creating. But he didn't rest. He's still working. What did Jesus say in John chapter 14? I go to prepare a place for you. Now your imagination and dreams can decipher what he's doing to prepare a place for us, but that's activity. And I believe that we could call that work. On the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, verse 11, the people hearing the gospel or the apostles talking in their own tongues said, we do hear them speak in our tongues the wonderful works of God. We need to understand, work is not a curse that came to us in Genesis chapter 3. Work preceded Genesis chapter 3. In Genesis chapter 2, God said to Adam, I want you to work and tend the garden. Now, work did become more tedious and laborious in Genesis chapter 3 because now Adam had to deal with thorns and thistles. But work is not part of the curse, despite how we might feel on any given day. Rest and work are not antithetical. They're fellow companions, at least for the Christian. Which brings me now to, and requires me and us to consider the theology of rest and work. Edgar Allan Poe, and definitions are so important as we enter into this. Edgar Allan Poe once wrote, a definition is that which describes an object so well as to distinguish it from all others. So I sat down at my desk and said, okay, John, write out a definition of rest. What is rest? Well, I started in the wrong place. I started with rest is the absence of work. That's an incorrect definition, I believe, or certainly an incomplete definition. Oftentimes we define things by the antithesis of what we think they are. So we define work based on the opposite of rest. We define rest based on the opposite of work. The problem with that is what is work for one person is not work for another, and what is rest for one person is not rest for another. I find some things restful that you wouldn't. I find some things to be tedious work that you would find joyfully and refreshing. So there's more to it than simply the absence of one or the other. In a week, we have 168 hours. Let's say you're still working, so on average, you may work 40 hours. Some of you go longer than that, some of you are part-time, but just bear with me. You work 40 hours, it takes you an hour getting and going and lunch. So that consumes 50 hours a week. Then you're going to sleep another 50 hours a week. I'll give you 7 hours a night. That leaves you with 78 non-working waking hours every week. Well, you would legitimately say to that, well, I'm still actively working some in those 78 hours because I have to do housework, I have to do yard work, I have to do all these other tasks when I get home from work. I give you that. But even when I give you that or give myself that, I've still got multiple digit, double digit hours that I have discretionary capability to decide what I'm going to do. And I can rest, absence of work, or I can work. My point is that non-activity and rest are not always synonymous. Rest, therefore, is not simply the absence of activity. I believe rest is the absence of tedious activity. I don't know that I will get to this, so I'll just insert it and you can think a little bit about it and then discount it as I move on. I believe we will work in heaven. And that would cause some people to say, well, I'm not so sure I want to go. Well, that's obviously pretty shallow thinking. But as we work in heaven, it will be non-tedious work, so it will be joyful work. We are told that we are going to serve in heaven. That's an activity. I don't know what that service is going to be, but it's a form of activity or work. And God made us to enjoy work. Therefore, why would it not be in heaven? It wasn't part of the curse. It was part of the Garden of Eden plan, and that's about as close to heaven as we can get short of heaven. Now, I'm not dogmatic about that, but I believe that we should not expect to just sit in heaven because we're not made for that. We are told we will rest in heaven, but what makes rest enjoyable? Work. Work is what makes rest enjoyable, and rest is what makes work doable. So if we only rest, where will we work? And if we only work, how long will we be productive in that? I believe the Lord knows the answer. The answer is not very long. I believe, as I think about this, work gives each of us the opportunity to be a partner with God in His goals. Rest gives each of us the opportunity to enter in communion with God to enjoy His creation. Some of you would look at this week as a time of rest. You don't all look that way. I go around the campground and I see some of these mothers just the sweats dripping off their face as they're trying to do things for their family. I got here Sunday, went in and checked in, and there was two of you in the laundromat, two ladies, in the laundromat doing laundry. Now, they were doing it out of love, but I'm not going to say that they thought that was a restful activity. I didn't think it was. I thought they might ask for help, so I left. But they were wise enough to know that I wouldn't be much help. But for many, maybe most of us, this rhythm of work and rest is elusive. Some neglect to rest. And some really hardly have the opportunity to rest. Maybe single mothers or various times in your life when you just have obviously more to do than you can get to. Understood. But many people have ceased to attempt to balance work and rest. And I think whether you're a senior citizen or raising a young family or a middle-aged adult, that balance is the key. All rest is laziness, and all work is unproductive. But in our society, and somewhat sadly, the church usually reflects the society we live in eventually. It may lag 10 or 15 years. In our society, many people are simply underworked. Sometimes because they can't find employment, but sometimes because that is a choice in which we have made. Some lack the motivation to work. And then they don't really know how to rest. They know how to be prodigal in their use of time, but not productive in their rest. As I said, rest without work is laziness, and work without rest is burnout. And I don't think God wants either one of those for us. A lack of rest, physical rest, and even spiritual in a sense, can compromise our health and the quality of our work. I know people in the church who have tried to work so much for the Lord that they almost become unproductive because they don't refresh themselves. Even Jesus went off and had to have times to be refreshed and rest. If he needed it, goodness knows you and I do. But he always came back to what was important. When we reach levels of exhaustion because we haven't rested, it begins to affect our interpersonal relationships. Families suffer because of fatigue. Mom or dad's tired. They're short-tempered rather than patient and long-tempered. We've all probably dealt with that and wished we could take those moments back. It's not really us, but it's us when we're not rested. So we need to ask ourselves maybe just a few basic questions before I pause. Is your current work pace physically, emotionally, and spiritually healthy for yourself and for your family? Or is it out of balance? Is our work rest pace God honoring? Do we work too much or do we rest too much? One of those deals with family balance, the other deals with personal and spiritual balance. Back in Genesis chapter 2, it says God rested. Why did God rest? Was the creation so much for him that he just exhausted himself and couldn't go any further? God forbid. But it says he rested. Why did God rest? Well, I think there are several answers to that question. I'm not going to give you all of them that I have in mind, but I'll just give one that I get from the young people that maybe jumps out at them. They told me he rested to establish a pattern, a perpetual pattern for us, that we would work and that we would rest. And in fact, Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, although it doesn't use the word Sabbath, was a prototype and establishment for what became the Sabbath. Sabbath is not actually mentioned until Exodus chapter 16, and it's not really dwelt on much until we get to Exodus chapter 20 as the fourth of the Ten Commandments. But God has a little bit of foresight, and he knew where he was taking his people and where we were heading. Before I pause and see if anybody has a comment, I wanted to read to you a thing written by Richard Foster. This is just a one sentence, but it's a little long. He coined, at least it's the only place I found it, he coined the phrase holy leisure. For our sense, we could call it holy rest. He said it refers to a sense of balance in life, an ability to be at peace through the activities of the day, an ability to rest and take time to enjoy beauty, and an ability to pace ourselves so that we can be more effective as workers. Many of the cracks in our culture are stress fractures. You know what a stress fracture is medically. But emotionally and spiritually, many of the cracks in our lives and in our culture are really stress fractures. But work requires fuel. I have to put gas in my car periodically, and so do you, because the car is working and it exhausts the fuel. The same is true of you and me. When we work, we exhaust fuel and we need to replenish that fuel. I think God rested not because he was tired. I don't think God rested because he couldn't go any further. I think God rested because he wants to have this reservoir of refreshing replenishment that you and I, when we enter his rest and tap into his rest, can enjoy his rest and refuel ourselves for more spiritual work, even while we're here on this earth. I'm going to pause. Don't feel obligated, but if you have a comment or a question, I always prefer comments because I don't have to answer them. But I'll give you that opportunity, because to ask you to sit and listen to me for an hour and 45 minutes is cruel and inhumane punishment. But I'll leave that up to you. I think there's somebody in imminence, Brad.
I just have two questions, John. I'm sorry about that. I don't have any comments.
Next.
Is worship work? And then tied in with that question, on the Lord's Day, should we view it the same way that the Jews viewed the Sabbath, as a day of rest?
Okay. Those are pretty good, Joel. Proud of you. Now I'm trying to remember the first one. What was the first one? Oh, is worship work? It can be, but it shouldn't be. Worship to me is an activity. If it becomes a tedious activity, then it becomes work. But if it does not become a tedious activity, then it is a joyous activity that for me would not be work. It would simply be an opportunity to enjoy that activity. And I've got some examples later on. I'll save them. And the second one is, should we treat the Lord's Day in terms of work like the Jews were told to treat the Sabbath? Well, I don't think there's any commandment in the New Testament that says we can only walk so many feet or so far. So I would answer it no in that sense. But having said that, I think that we as a culture, and as I said, the church just follows the culture maybe a decade later, I think we miss a great opportunity to replenish ourselves spiritually by using the Lord's Day more as a meditative and reflective time rather than, okay, it's 12 o'clock, church is over, doom, and it's not very restful. I think we just miss an opportunity. Is that a sin? I don't have a chapter and verse. I just think it's a tremendous missed opportunity. Now, there are obviously some professions that I'm glad work on Sunday. You know, if you're in the hospital, you don't want all your caregivers to leave. And I don't think God intends that. I'm glad the police are available on Sunday. I know there are some jobs such as that. But that's different than picking a job so that you don't have to go to church. And that probably does happen on occasion. And that's hard for me to see that it's pleasing. I do, however, think that we miss an opportunity of fellowship. And those of you my age or even younger probably remember, if you were raised in the church, your parents would have people over for Sunday dinner and you'd spend the day together. No, those were golden. And now we might see them at Olive Garden, but we don't spend the day with it. It's more of a lost opportunity than something I can simply call a sin. So I leave that to people's discretion. Having said that, I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth, because the day I probably expend the most energy is Sunday, and I will come home 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 9 o'clock in the evening, exhausted. But it's a good tired. It's not work. It's good tired. And so in one sense, I'm not sure I work for a living. I remember what Tom Dennis once said. He was teaching a VBS, and a little kid came up and said, "Did you ever have a real job?" And I kind of understand that. I don't know how to answer that. I have work, but it's not tedious. It's usually joyful. Now, there's a few tedious times in it. I'll have to admit that. Thank you, Joel. I don't know if I answered you well enough, but I'll be here for a while. Do we have anybody else? I just can't see. We'll take... one more. Just for the sake of time.
John, I'll let you off the hook with a couple comments.
Okay.
I do appreciate the work you do on Sunday, by the way. As far as God resting on the seventh day, I agree with you that he established that pattern for his people under the Mosaic Law, especially to follow. But I look at Genesis 2 and 3.
You looked at what?
Genesis 2 and 3.
Okay.
Says, then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. To me, I read that as he just ceased his creation. So he completed it.
Okay.
But then my other comment was on working on Sunday, as to Joel's question. I think of it as, if I go to worship service on the Lord's Day and I'm thinking about what I'm going to do after this, then I probably need to rest a little bit more.
Okay. I can consider those both good comments. Thank you. Okay, I want to talk just a little bit about the Sabbath. I've touched on it, and then we've got about 10 minutes before we have a break. The first thing in the Bible that is called holy was not a person. It was not a place. It wasn't even hardly a thing in terms of temporalness. It was a day. In Genesis chapter 2, and Kevin was alluding to this, in verses 2 and 3, it says, and this is in the ESV, but some other translations will use the word sanctified. On the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. First time anything is called holy in the Bible. And I just mention that because, to me, that tells me how important that day of rest, that Sabbath day, was in the mind of the Lord. Now, we don't observe the Sabbath day like the Jews were commanded to do it. We're on the first day of the week because of the resurrection and not the seventh day. But I don't know that concept of refurbishing and replenishing ourselves is lost. Genesis 2 doesn't tell me or you why he made that day holy, but he did. It doesn't tell me why in Exodus chapter 20 he made that Sabbath day one of the Ten Commandments. But after 6 days of creation, God looked upon the works and he said it was very good. He did that in Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. But it wasn't until he got to the seventh day that he reserved the word sanctified or holy. Many people, I think, today think rest is something you do so that you can work. And given a choice, some people would prefer their bodies never need to rest and they could continually work every day. I was going over my notes probably before you got up this morning. Some of you did get up pretty early. And there were two people that I remember being at this that I always think of when I think of people who would rather work than rest. And there's a lot of them, but these two popped into my mind. Glenn Davis and Clifton Cooper. You ask those men to rest and you might as well shoot them. Little tongue-in-cheek, but I think the point is valid. And I really, well, I still remember it, and they've been gone for some time. And you have names in your mind. Some see rest as the absence of productivity. I see rest as the enhancement of productivity, as long as it's not taken to an extreme. In Genesis 2, God both works and rests. God in His omnipotence does not need rest for any reason of physical fatigue or exhaustion. He does not need rest so that He can become more productive. So clearly there has to be something more to rest than simply maintaining energy for production. It's important to note that holiness, the holiness of rest, does not undervalue the importance or the dignity of work. I think one of God's great tasks, and I don't think it exhausts Him, but it would, just thinking about it would exhaust me. One of His great tasks is to make you and I holy enough to be the bride of Christ. And many times, maybe most times, we're not holy enough to really deserve to be the bride of Christ, even though we're promised that if we're faithful, that's what will happen. God has His hands full trying to make us holy enough to be His Son's bride. And you know that within your own heart, and I know that within my own heart. I believe God affirms the goodness of work and the sacredness of rest, and those two are beautifully woven together. That's why when I got this assignment, I thought, I cannot simply talk about rest because I can't extract it from work. And had they sent me the assignment of work, I would have said, I can't extract that from rest because they're so tied together. I believe the Sabbath, as we have it in the Old Testament, functions as a sign pointing to a covenant between God and Israel. And keeping the Sabbath was a whole, was a living out of a spatial relationship with God. But I believe the Sabbath, at least the first one, was a time when God refreshed Himself so that we could, as we draw near to Him, and we're going to talk in the second hour of how we can draw nearer to Him, how as we draw nearer to Him, we can tap in on that rest. As you get older, you don't sleep like you used to. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but the people here over 65 probably woke up more than once, if not twice, during the night. And Ecclesiastes chapter 12 says we're not going to sleep as sound as we used to. But that has nothing to do with our ability to tap into the true rest that Christ and God have for us. I believe the Sabbath was an enactment of God's desire for an intimate relationship with His people, and God offers His people a weekly, offered them then a weekly refreshment through the communion with Him and His creation. And every first day of the week, we have that opportunity again. Sure, you can commune with God on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but there is a specialness about assembling with the saints and communing with the Lord as we surround the table that should be a refreshing activity for us for the ensuing week to come. In Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 12, God says, I gave them my Sabbath as a sign between me and them, so that they might know that I am the that I, the Lord, sanctify them. It says, God says, I gave you my Sabbath. Why would He give them their Sabbath? So that they could be refreshed, and so that they could be spiritually strong. Sometimes we'll hear at a table talk on Sunday, well, we're doing this so that we'll be able to make it through another week. Well, there's some real valid theology to that if we're looking at it in terms of a refreshment. The Sabbath was a sign that the Creator has set to set apart a special relationship, and I believe even though we don't observe the Sabbath as the Jews did, we do have the first day of the week, which is our somewhat equivalent of the Sabbath in many ways, as a special covenantal relationship with Him. It's not an arbitrary sign like a tattoo or a secret handshake. It's a spiritual sign. Therefore, in Hebrews 4 and 1, he says, while the promise of entering his rest is still open, let us take care that none of you should seem to have failed to reach it. Now, there's some heavenly eschatology implications from that passage in Hebrews 4. I know that. But I don't think it's all eschatology. I think sometimes it's right here and right now. Rest is much more than simply recuperating from a hectic day or a tiring week. It's the affirmation of a spatial relationship that God wants us to have with Him and for Him to have with us. Some of us in our younger years, and some of you are still in your younger years, you may have participated in a sporting activity with a very good athlete. When I was younger, I would go down to Bloomfield, Indiana, and there was a couple of guys down there that played high school basketball. We'd go down there and play basketball. But the problem was, they never got tired. And I did. And it was a real blessing when they saw me panting to say, well, why don't we take a little break and let's rest. They didn't need the rest. I needed it. God doesn't need the rest. I need it. And God says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, then let's get some rest so that we can then be productive in our work. I believe God established the Sabbath day, yes, as a prototype, but I also believe He established it as a reservoir of participatory rest for you and I. Not to be abused, because we can overrest and probably all of us have. We can take the attitude, well, let's leave it to the younger people because we've done it. Well, maybe you've done it. And maybe the younger people ought to pick up the mantles, as I talked about last night. But that's no reason for you and I to lay down the mantle. And shame on us as we get older if we do. My watch says 10 o'clock, so let's take a 30-minute break.